If you'd like to follow along, you can go ahead and be turned to Psalm 90. Psalm 90 is where we will be in just a few moments. I don't know why this is. It's probably human nature for most of us. But how many of you, and you don't have to show of hands here, but how many of you like to think about death? It's just not something we think a whole lot about. But if you were told this morning that you've got 2 weeks to live, what would you want to do? What would be some of the things that you would want to do if you only had 2 weeks to live? And I'm sure all of us would have different things. Some of us would want to go do something. Maybe some of you want to go skydive. Anybody ever been skydiving in here before? Pat Raymer, you've been skydiving? Why does that not surprise me? Anybody else been skydiving in here before? A few of you've been skydiving too? Wow. Is it something that is, should I do it? Yes, Pat? Absolutely. All right. Well, if I had 2 weeks to live and want to go skydiving and I want Pat to go with me, will you do that for me? You do it with me? I got you. Well, some of you, you know, you want to go do certain things. You want to say certain things to certain people. When you think about death, it changes things a little bit. It kind of reminds me of, you know, growing up, we have all these near-death experiences, or at least we do sometimes as kids, because we don't understand what's going on really in life. We haven't grown up yet. We don't really know the difference between being really hurt or just a little bit of being hurt. Kills me sometimes when I see my kids come in and it's like their leg has fallen off and it's just a little bruise. You know, for me growing up, we didn't have a whole lot of stuff. We didn't have all the different name brands and clothes. You know, everybody else was wearing Levi's. I was wearing sweatpants, you know. I didn't have the indoor-outdoor leather Spalding basketball. I had a volleyball that was painted brown. We just, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of stuff. I rode around on a Husky bike, and everybody else had, you know, a 10-speed. And that was fine because I knew that in order to have friends, I at least had to be, you know, creative in how I used what I had. So I began to learn how to pop wheelies. Now, for those of you in the pre-helmet generation, mom's worried about everything generation. This is when you would, you know, pop the bicycle back on one wheel. And I got really, really good at this. In fact, I got so good at it that I began to try to show off in front of my friends who had the 10-speed bikes. And they got to the point where they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. The only way you can do that is because you're riding that Huffy. And I was like, all right, you know what? I got this, you know, plastic bike. I'm going to do it on your nice 10-speed bike. Now, again, if this had been today, I would have been wearing one of these nice helmets, you know, that kids wear today. But I wasn't back then. If I had to wear a hat back then, it would have been one of those construction hard hats. And I'd have made it cool. But I was on this 10-speed, and I'm gonna pop it up, and I'm going to ride it through the neighborhood like I'd been riding my Huffy to show these guys I could do it. Sure enough, I was doing it. But the problem was this. Where are the brakes on a 10-speed bike? For those of you who had them, the privileged few of you who had these back in the early 80s, where were the brakes on a 10-speed bike? They were on the what? They were on the handlebars. Now, for those of you who grew up like me in the 80s and didn't have a whole lot of stuff, where were the brakes on an old Husky bike? The pedals. That was not something I knew, and it would have benefited me greatly to understand that before I tried this. So I popped the 10-speed up, and I'm riding down, and I'm showing out, and I'm showing off, and here I am. And the problem is, in order to be able to pop a wheelie for very long, you've got to balance the brake so you can kind of keep moving forward. Well, I was used to balancing the brake with my pedals. And so there was a problem when I was beginning to go back a little bit too far, and I began to hit the pedals, and all they did was just spin. And I did a complete 360. Busted my head open in the pavement. Everybody comes running out, you know, blood's coming out of my head. I'm laying there on the ground looking up at the stars. All my friends are around, you know, looking at me, pointing at me. I had a friend who went to a Catholic school who's coming out and he's going to read me the last rites because I'm dying here in the road. You know, somebody calls my parents and I'm laying there as a kid thinking, this is it. I'm dying. I'm never going to graduate high school. I'm never going to have a family. All these different things. You know, and then my dad comes and he's like, oh, he's fine. Pick him up, put him in the car and take me home. But it was in that moment as a little kid that I can remember making all of these major life decisions of like, I'm going to eat ice cream sandwiches for the rest of my life if I can live through this. We do all these crazy things when we think about death. I want us to spend this morning and the next few weeks looking at our lives with this idea as if we only had just a few more days to live. Maybe we have 30 days. Let's just spend the next 30 days together. We all can say we've got 30 days, and I pray that we all live for at least the next 30 days. That's my prayer, that we live for 30 days, and we can make it through these next 3 or 4 weeks together. And hopefully, by the time we get through with this, we'll be able to understand how we can live with such a clarity of purpose that it changes the way that we look at life. It changes the way that we look at our relationships. It changes the way that we look at each other. It changes the words that we use. Because if we really and truly only had a couple of days or a couple of weeks to live, I would imagine that every single one of us would be doing something different today and for the remainder of these next 2 or 3 weeks. I would imagine that all of us, if we had a list of things that we wanted to do, if we knew that we didn't have very long to live. You know, there was a movie that came out not too long ago, Bucket List, if y'all remember seeing that. And there was a list of things that they wanted to do because they knew that their time on earth was short. Well, for the Christian, our time on earth with an eternal perspective is very, very short. But in order for us to understand that, we have to see the big picture, which is what I want us to dig into a little bit first of all right here. I want us to unpack this idea of how we live with a crystal clear purpose is to understand where we are in light of eternal things. So I want you to notice Psalm 90, and then I want us to notice James 4, which we read earlier. But Psalms 90, beginning in verse 12, the psalmist is writing for us, "So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom." Notice James chapter 4, we read it earlier, but I want to read it again. Let's pick up in verse 13 of James chapter 4. "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit." That is the way of the world. That is what we do every day of our life. We make plans of how to make money, of how to do this, of where we want to go, of how we want to do that. We make plans. We've got to be at the ballpark. We've got to be at school. We've got all these things going on in our life. Notice this. "Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring." What is your life? What is your life? If somebody asked you right now to describe what is your life, you would probably come up with a lot of different things. My life, you know, involves my family, my spouse, my children, my job, my extended family. What is your life? Notice this, what James says, "For you are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin." When I look at Psalm 90 and I look at James chapter 4, one of the things, as you begin to put this picture together of how to live with crystal clarity, this purpose, it helps to understand how small my life really is. When you think about the enormous nature of God and this narrative that he has been weaving through time all the way from creation to right now, has been this amazing story, this redemptive story of him wanting to create mankind, sin entering into the world, and from that moment on, devising a plan where he was going to send his son to die for the sins of all of humanity, and then he's going to create a church, create a family for the people who become a part of his called out, the ecclesia, to be a part of so that they can die to themselves, so that they can truly live, and they can live with such a crystal clear purpose that they live so different from the world, that people look at them and say, you know what, I can know that they are followers of God by the way that they love each other. In fact, last week when we read Matthew chapter 25 on the day of judgment, the essence of this plan of the called out was for these people to treat people so differently that there was something unique about Christians. You see, here's the struggle with Psalm 90 and verse 12. Psalm 90 and verse 12, if you see this, teach us to number our days. Why? Why is it important for us to understand that time for us is very limited? Why? Because it helps us gain a heart of wisdom, if you finish verse 12 there. A heart of wisdom, it causes us to be wise and to have the wisdom of God in our life, which means that we treat each and every day as if it is our last, which means we live a little bit differently, which means we talk a little bit differently. Paul mentions something in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, and if you want to read that, you can go ahead and turn there, but I want you to notice a couple of things in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, Paul again is writing to the church there in Thessalonica. Let's pick up in verse 11. For we hear that some among you, now before we get too far into this, for we hear that some among you, what are people saying about your life right now? Paul is referencing some of those early Christians in Thessalonica, or Thessaloniki now is the modern day city there. He's referencing that the way that these people had been living their life, he had heard some things about them. What are people saying about the way that you live your life? What are people saying about the way that you spend your time? What are the people saying about the choices that you make? Notice, keep on going down. For we hear that some of you walk in idleness, not busy at work, but busybodies. Idleness. Now, living in idleness, I don't know how we do that in today's society, because I don't see a whole lot of people who just live an idle life. We are probably now more busy than we ever have been. People are running everywhere. They've got to be at work. They've got to be at meetings. They've got to get kids to school. They've got to make sure the car gets worked on. They've got to make sure this, that, and it's not even lunchtime yet. And then lunchtime comes, and they've got to go to this meeting, and they've got to take care of that, and they've got to go to this, and they've got to go to this event at school. They've got to go to this event at sports. They've got to take care of this at the doctor's office. They've got to take care of this at work. And it just goes by so fast, and it goes by in such a crazy, frenetic pace that I don't understand living idle lives. But Paul goes on. They're not busy at work, but busybodies. That word busybody, what kind of mental image does that give you? To me, it's of somebody who is so busy doing so much stuff, but yet the stuff that they are doing really has no significant value to it. The idea of teaching us to number our days hopefully helps us understand that everything that we do with every moment of every day should have significance. It should have some intentionality behind it. That the words that I use today to speak to you when I pass you here as we are getting ready to leave here in just a few minutes should have some eternal significance to them, because we live such a temporary amount of time here on this earth. Our days are numbered. Our moments are numbered. It means that everything that we do should have significance and should have value. It really pales in comparison to idle chatter and idle words, and idle gossip. And some of the things that we get upset about and we talk about. You know, I can remember a couple years ago when it became a reality that I was going to lose my mom. And I can remember there for the first couple of weeks afterwards, the things that I would think about, the things that I would focus on, the things that occupied my mind, all of a sudden were something completely different than was there a month ago. I can remember thinking about my family. I can remember thinking about just life being so fragile. And if life is so fragile, there's certain things that need to change. But we only ever truly get that appreciation until we get the big picture and we see how things fit together. I want you to notice the second thing real quick. I want you to move from this idea of a big picture to this idea of some very practical steps for us. Some things that we can be doing in our everyday life that will hopefully help us. Right here in Psalm 90, it's mentioned, teach us to number our days. Look over to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 17. Therefore, do not be foolish. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 17. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And do not, excuse me, that's 17. Drop it in verse 15. Look carefully then how you will walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Making the best use of our time. If you had to make a list of the things that you wanted to do, if you only had 30 days to live, and you put everything down on a sheet of paper, there was no right answers, there was no wrong answers. I mean, if it was like me and you wanted to have a you wanted to eat a whole chocolate pie every day for the next 30 days. If you got 30 days to live, that's what I'd do. I mean, you just, whatever it is, you want to go to Israel, you want to go to, you know, all the seven wonders of the world, if you want to go skydiving, we're signing up folks right now, let's go. Whatever it is, take that list and then go back and narrow it down a little bit. Take off the things that you just can't do, like eat a pie a day, and narrow that list down and begin to number the days so that we understand what are the things that are really the most important to us. I did this a couple of weeks ago. A couple of things that came back to me were this. As a father, I was going to start asking follow-up questions to my children's questions. So many times as a dad, I find myself giving one-word answers to questions from my kids. Hey, Dad, what about this? You know, have you ever heard that? Yes, I've heard about that. Let's move on. Like, it's almost as if I don't even validate the question. I'm going to start asking follow-up questions. Not only am I going to start asking follow-up questions, I'm going to really try to stay off of any type of media, social media, computers, tablets, phones, whatever, until after the kids go to bed. Now, you may be thinking, why do that? Because if I've only got 30 days to live, I want to spend every moment I can with the people that I love. One of the things I came up with was, you know what, instead of choosing relaxation, personal relaxation, I'm going to choose conversation with Melanie. Another one for me was, I'm going to try to answer every single one of the Daddy, can we questions with the word yes. Daddy, can we go outside and play? Yes. Daddy, can you sit on the floor and do a puzzle? Yes. Daddy, can you read me a book? Yes. Daddy, can you, honey, can you change a diaper? Yes. I'll throw that one in there. You know, all those things that we get stuck. Imagine how different our lives would be if we lived with the clarity of understanding that our time is limited on this earth, that our relationships are divine, and our relationships are avenue where God gets to use us to show his love to people. And it no longer becomes about how much money there is in the bank and what kind of possessions we have, or my way or your way. It really doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. And when we can understand the big picture, and we can practically start making and taking some steps to change our lives, I think things will show a definite difference in our life. Now, here's the problem with that. Some of you are thinking, I can do that for 2 weeks. I can do that for 3 weeks. I can do that for 4 weeks. But I want you to notice the last thing, and that is this idea of God's power. Here's the problem with resolve. It's just like New Year's resolutions. I was reading something back in January about New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions, if you still keep them, which they can be good and bad, usually somebody keeps them for roughly around 17 to 18 days. That's basically 2.5 weeks. Why is it that resolve fades away so quickly? It's because it relies on willpower. I want you to notice a prayer that Paul shares in Ephesians chapter 1. And it's a prayer that he shares, but it's also a prayer that I have for our church. And it's a prayer that I have for myself. And that is this, is that we will turn from willpower to real power. That we will give over our life to God so that it just doesn't become a two-week commitment, that it becomes just the way that we live our life. Notice Ephesians chapter 1, beginning in verse 19. Ephesians chapter 1. Let's pick up in verse 18. Having the eyes of your hearts enlightened, that you may know what is the hope to which he has called you, which are the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and what is the immeasurable greatness of his power. It cannot be measured, the amount of power that God has, toward us who believe, according to the working of his great might that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly places. Having the hearts, having the eyes of your hearts enlightened. What does that look like? What does it look like to have the eyes of your heart enlightened? It's where you begin to understand that your life is just a vapor. It's where you begin to understand that life is so temporary and is so fragile. And because of that, you want to live differently because you understand as a follower of Jesus, there are things that we should be doing with the way that we live. We should not be doing so many different things, and we should be doing more things. And when we begin to understand that life is very temporary, it motivates us, I believe, to focus on the eternal things and to let go of these temporary things. Control and power are temporary. They're figments of our imagination. Who is the one who's in absolute control, church? Let's say it together. Who's in control? God. It's not me and it's not you. When we fight for control, we're fighting for something that is a figment of our imagination. Who has all power on heaven and earth? Who is it? God. When we want power and control, we are fighting for something that is a figment of our imagination. We will never be in power. We will never be in control. The sooner that we surrender that and decide to live for Christ and allow him to live through us and to realize that our life is so temporary, and the beautiful, beautiful souls that God has placed in our life are the souls that we should be pouring our life into. There was a minister who spent his life ministering to people at the expense of his family. This is just an example. This happens in any avenue of life. It can be in business, it can be personally, it can be emotionally, but this guy spent his entire life. In fact, he was so busy taking care of things that there were nights where he would just spend the night at church. He wouldn't go home. Through years and 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 years of neglect of his family, his spouse finally decided to divorce him. The day that their divorce was to go final, this guy sent his wife a dozen long stem roses. He said, "I'm sorry for everything I've done. Please don't do this." His wife responded, "Had you woken up and realized this long before now, we would not be here today." What is it going to take for us to wake up and realize what is truly most important in life? What is it going to take for us to wake up and realize that this life is so, so, so precious, fragile, and short? And that the things that we should be most concerned about are God's values, not ours. That's the heart of wisdom that you read about there in Psalm 90. This whole idea that we do in our mind, this spiritual ping pong of my power versus God's power, my power versus God's power, and we want control and we give it to God and then we fight for it back, and we want his power but then we want to use our own power, and we go back and forth with this and we fight for it and we divide for it and we do all kinds of stuff. If we would just lay down all of our will and see the big picture and realize how insignificant and short our life really is. Take some steps to number our days. To make sure when you go back and read Ephesians chapter 5, to analyze our life and to make sure that we're living for the things that are eternal, that God values the most. And then to recognize that God's power is the only thing that's going to allow us to live like this. If we're only promised the next breath, if we're only promised this moment, if we're only promised the next minute, how many of us have our priorities in the right place? If we're only promised today, how many of us are focused on the things that God wants us to be focused on. If we're only promised today, how many of us would want to do something different? If we're only promised today, how many of us would live today differently than we lived yesterday? If we're only promised this worship service, this opportunity to pray and to sing and to give, how many of us will do something different in this service than we did last week? Do you see how things change when your perspective becomes crystal clear? Because here's the thing. If every single one of us knew that we only had 2 weeks to live, I guarantee you all of us this morning would want to make sure that there's nothing that stands between us and God. Not only that, we would want to make sure that every wrong that we've ever done to somebody else was made right. We would want to make sure that anything that was standing between us and our spouse, or us and our children, or us and our parents and children, we would want to make sure whatever we could do, we would want to make that right. Because again, we've only got a couple of weeks to live. We have a breath and a moment right now. And it's the only breath and the only moment that we're promised. So here's the deal. How many of us are ready to do something different? How many of us need to come and ask God to forgive us? How many of us need to say, you know what, I know who Jesus is. I know He is the Son of God, and I want to confess that. And I want to give up of my own life. I want to repent of my sins. I want to be baptized. I want to be buried in that watery grave. I want to become a follower of Jesus. You have this moment and this breath, and if we redeem this moment and this breath for God, if we redeem this song for God, we'll do something different. And here's the thing. It's God's power that's going to give you the ability to help come. If you need to come and ask God to forgive you, if you need to come and become a follower of His, won't you do it while we stand and sing?